This podcast is supported by an educational grant from Insight Biosciences Canada, available through the CDA Corporate Supporter Program.
Anytime you go to a dermatology meeting, I do highly recommend you look out for the updated SOLAR posters, because you're going to get really great information comparing the therapies that we have in the real world in infection rates, malignancies, overall mortality, mental health. All of these things are presented. It really is a rich registry.
All right, well, that's Dr. Melinda Gooderham. She's a medical director at Skin Center for Dermatology in Peterborough, Ontario. And she's an assistant professor at Queen's University. She also works as a consultant physician at the Peterborough Regional Health Center. She's back as our guest on this episode of JCMS Author Interviews. I'm your host, Kirk Barber, the editor-in-chief of the Journal of Cutaneous Medicine and Surgery and a clinical professor of medicine at the University of Calgary. Today, we're thrilled to have Dr. Gooderham on the podcast with us to discuss an article that appeared in our November-December issue of the Journal of Cutaneous Medicine and Surgery. The article was entitled, "The Base Characteristics of Canadian Patients in the Psoriasis Longitudinal Assessment and Registry, the SOLAR Registry." Reminder, this article is open access on the JCMS website. All right. Well, welcome, Melinda, to JCMS podcast again. Thank you for joining me. I'm really quite keen to hear about the SOLAR Registry. You've published in the, it's the November-December issue, and but the Canadian experience. So the Canadian experience we'll talk about, but tell me a little bit about SOLAR and how it got started, what's it all about, has it been valuable, that sort of thing.
So yeah, so SOLAR, which stands for the Psoriasis Longitudinal Assessment and Registry, has been around for quite a while. It is a global registry that was developed as a post-marketing safety commitment back in the day when infliximab was first brought onto market. And so the FDA sort of mandated this post-marketing registry just to monitor safety of this new type of medication. It was a biologic. It was one of the first. And then as time went on, Janssen, who was running the registry, had another medication, ustekinumab or Stelara. And so then that became a major part of the SOLAR registry. And it enrolled 12,000 patients and followed them over 8 years, which is actually quite a long time for what we do in dermatology.
So 8 years, and what do we learn? The psoriasis can be treated, but all about the comorbidities. I look at these registries and say, they've taught us a ton about our psoriatic patients.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there's so many registries around the world now. SOLAR being the main global one, right? So many different countries were involved. You know, heaviest presence from North America, with the U.S. and Canada being the highest enrollers, but still some European, Middle Eastern countries in the SOLAR registry. So they just had to be candidates for systemic therapy. So I think one of the strengths of the SOLAR registry is that we have patients on many different therapies, but also patients not on biologics. So patients who are on phototherapy, using topicals, and they've been a great control group to look at things like infection rates and more background rates of the psoriasis population. So when we think about, you know, what are the rates of infection in a psoriasis population, we can look at the SOLAR registry of the patients who are not receiving biologics and have a good comparator.
With regard to obesity, heart disease, all those things that we sort of thought about that might be related to our patients with psoriasis, clearly our group going in to the Canadian group going into the SOLAR registry all had those things, or not all, but significant proportion did. How has it played out over time?
Actually, this surprised me a bit about the Canadian subgroup of the SOLAR registry was the proportion of patients that were overweight or obese, which I thought might be higher in the United States than Canada, but it's not true. Actually, the Canadians had the higher overweight, obese population with about 85%. And the overall global population, which was mostly U.S. patients, was about 80%. So it's pretty high. I mean, I think if you treat psoriasis patients, it's not that surprising. But still, when you think of it as a number of the proportion of psoriasis patients that struggle with this comorbidity, it's high. Yeah.
The question is, Ozempic, Okay, I know it was trialed as a psoriasis therapy at one point in time, right? But tell me, has anybody looked at people that have taken Ozempic and are no longer obese? Do they still have their psoriasis?
No, I don't know that that study's been done yet. There's been other ways to look at weight loss, gastric bypass, that sort of thing, that have shown significant weight loss, improving psoriasis, reducing the need for medication, for systemic medication. And I think, I mean, now that Ozempic's been out a while, used for more than just diabetes, I think we will start to see some reports like this. I can't think of anything offhand.
Anecdotally, even, I haven't seen it. I just sort of think to myself, I should have seen it by now. It's such a popular drug, lots of people losing weight. I see my patients, and I'm not perhaps registering it so clearly as when you and I talk, but I don't see it as an issue. I mean, the gastroenterologists are keen on Ozempic because it's going to change the non-alcoholic fatty liver disease profile. When I think about, maybe this will change our psoriasis profile, maybe less drug or not needing drug, but I haven't seen it. I mean, when I think back to my practice, lots of psoriasis patients. Now, some of these folks I do virtually because the drugs have been so successful. I haven't looked at them, but I don't know. I was interested. I mean, you see much more psoriasis than I do. So what do you think?
It's true. I can't think of one case where I have thought to myself, wow, their psoriasis got better since they started Ozempic. I mean, I have had patients already clear on their biologic who then went on Ozempic, and I'm thinking now you're clear and you're thinner. So it could be just that the drugs are so good now that we're just not seeing that.
Yeah, and so now it behooves us to say, how much psoriasis drug do you need? Because Ozempic, as I understand it, and not being an expert, but for most people in the obese category, it's going to be a lifelong event, right? In some way, shape, or form, it's going to have to be used to keep their obesity, to keep the cravings away, and all this sort of metabolic event under control. So. So that was one thing I because I've not registered it, and it'll be interesting to follow through and see. So the other thing that we've got to deal with, and as dermatologists now, is there are no family doctors. We have in Canada, so 1 million patients or more without a family doctor. And we preach, comorbidities. And I used to write a note to say, check the comorbidities. Now I have no one to write a note to. So I'm starting to investigate people myself. Everywhere. And it's interesting to turn back into that world where you're starting to manage people's hypertension and cholesterol issues as a dermatologist.
Yeah, it's definitely a problem across the entire country, which needs to be. And it's not something that's going to be fixed quickly. No matter what funding comes in, there's years before that funding makes any difference.
So I'm going back to my roots. I'm going to be an internist again in managing people's comorbidities because we can identify them. We know they're true. And your study clearly showed that, as you pointed out earlier, that's a huge amount of or a huge number of patients that are obese on this trial. And this trial was basically aimed at moderate to severe psoriasis. You think that's got to be maybe 3% of the population have psoriasis, maybe even 0.5% of the Canadian population have moderate to severe disease, or 1%. These are tremendous numbers. Now, the question, and I'll ask you because you're much more familiar with the research in psoriasis, has the treatment of the comorbidities ever improved psoriasis? Has hypertension treatment ever improved the patient's psoriasis? And so, or has the treatment of the psoriasis, maybe a better question to ask you is, has the treatment of psoriasis made a difference to cardiovascular mortality and morbidity?
Well, that's a tricky one because you're going to have people on both sides that will argue yes and no. So there is a lot of research out there showing a reduction in, plaques in arteries and things like that with the use of some biologics targeted to IL-23, IL-17, TNF. Of course, there are, you know, some claims databases that show, you know, patients on TNF inhibitors had lower cardiovascular rates and lower cardiovascular events. But they're always criticized from the channeling bias or other biases that are inherent in these type of registries, and that maybe the healthier patients are given these biologics to begin with. And it's such large studies would need to be done. There was a study looking at using methotrexate in patients, not with psoriasis, but just in general, patients who've had a cardiovascular history, a cardiovascular event, and they did not find a reduction in cardiovascular events in that population with just using methotrexate. So there have been a couple of different studies.
Methotrexate for cardiovascular disease. That was methotrexate to clear their psoriasis, correct? Yeah.
Right. Yeah, correct. Mm-hmm. So, but just thinking in general, if you had a patient with psoriasis where you're using methotrexate, would you influence their cardiovascular outcomes? And if you took a high-risk population, gave the methotrexate, the answer was no from a cardiology point of view. Same with, I think, the CANTOS study with canakinumab also did not have that positive outcome there. So, but on the other hand, when you take psoriasis patients and you look at some cardiovascular markers, you do see some benefits. My thoughts always are that by the time they have moderate to severe psoriasis, that's pretty well established by the time we see them, and then we're giving them their biologic, is it too late to make a difference? Do we need to treat people earlier to be able to detect an improvement in their cardiovascular outcomes? By the time they see us, it's 8, 10, 15 years that they've been having psoriasis and things brewing in the inside,
Coronary arteries and things like that. Cardiologists and their statins might disagree with us because they suggest you start any time, right? There's no time like the present to get started, right? So they think that the interventions do make a difference.
Yeah. But I do have to say from a comorbidity standpoint, like just stepping away from cardiology for a minute, but thinking about the psoriatic arthritis patients and what I used to see in my patients when I started practicing before biologics were commonplace. To now, I mean, now I'm looking for one or two joints. Before, patients would come in with a walker, in a wheelchair, and it's actually remarkable the difference in the psoriatic that, you know, when was the last time you saw an arthritis needleless?
The biologic therapy that we use has made a difference to psoriatic arthritis, and probably doesn't show up at the incidence because the incidence remains the same. It's just the severity of the disease, as you point out, you know. Yeah. So clearly we've modified that comorbidity for sure.
Yeah. So that's why I feel that, you know, I kind of lean towards the research that's showing that there is a benefit, because I feel that if we can show such a significant improvement in something like psoriatic arthritis, there has to be something going on. And maybe our studies just aren't detecting it because patients don't qualify for a biologic until it's not too late, but it's later on in the process that we're not detecting.
So a joint disease might be correctable. Not correctable, but the inflammatory component, which is the symptoms, may be correctable. And thus, if you don't have inflammation, you don't have destruction. So let's tackle the mental health piece then. Is it a cause and effect, or is it just if I got bad psoriasis, then nobody can make me better, I'm getting sad?
I think there is a systemic inflammatory component for sure. We see that with other chronic illnesses where depression and anxiety are part of it. You know, you can treat someone's psoriasis and make them clear and not always, you know, improve their mental health issues. You know, you have patients who are clear who still have suicidal ideation and things like that. You know, a lot of studies with biologics do show an improvement in mood, and, you know, HADS scores improve once patients are treated with biologics, but they're not the only answer. I think it's...
Well, when I look at those studies and say, who wouldn't have an improved mood? In fact, the person that you should worry about is the person that doesn't have an improved mood if you get their psoriasis clear, right? I mean, because, I mean,
yeah,
the purpose of the word, we're treating these folks is so that they can function, feel better about themselves, in essence, right? I mean,
Well, and I think it all, you know, even tying in with just substance use, whether it's cigarettes, alcohol, other things, and patients, you know, cigarettes and alcohol can make your psoriasis worse. Well, patients with mental health issues may consume more substances. So it's this whole sort of tangled up
mess web because we can't figure it out. Because I'm going to tell you that I think there are patients out there where cigarettes and alcohol make their psoriasis better. It changes the mood.
Really?
Now they're not stressed about it. I'm not talking about alcohol abuse, but I'm talking about what one would consider moderate alcohol use. Which now, of course, in Health Canada, of course, is one drink a week. And I don't think that'll probably affect most people's psoriasis one way or the other. But anxiolytic and this mood thing, I think there's something to, I mean, how many times have you had somebody come into your office and sort of, you know, you've seen them for bad psoriasis and they took a biologic, or maybe they didn't, or they took methotrexate and it's 5 years out or 4 years out, and they come into your office and they, for the basal cell, and you say, you look back on the chart and you say, what happened? You know, I was managing, are you still on the, and they're not. And they say, oh, well, I changed my job, or I, you know, my family situation changed, or my brother-in-law moved out of the house, or something like that. I mean, it's just so difficult to get a handle. And I guess that's the purpose of SOLAR, isn't it? To try and look at groups of people and try and sort out through registries. Yeah.
But no, I have had those patients too, where, you know, my last note was discussing a biologic, so they had to be a certain severity, and then, you know, they didn't show up for the follow-up, but then they didn't need to for a few years until they're there for
so
something
else.
When
you go to the meetings about the SOLAR registry and see the papers that are printed out in 2020 plus, so we've had that 8 years, have there been any surprises to you?
Well, there, you know, last year at the AAD, sort of the paper that won the award for the most interesting, I can't remember the name of the award, was that patients on biologics had a lower mortality. So, you know, again, getting to that, are we influencing the comorbidities? Well, when you look at overall mortality, you do see a benefit. So I think we are doing something by controlling the inflammation. And this is over a prolonged period, right? These patients are being followed for 8 years. So if you do a 1 year, 2 year study, you may not be able to detect that. But having 8 years of patients on a biologic and seeing that reduction in overall mortality, I think is pretty significant. And there was also a recent publication this week from Alberta with Robert Miyadeki showing the same thing in 18,000 patients with psoriasis, that the patients on the biologics had lower overall mortality.
So dermatologists make a difference. All right.
We do.
Okay, well, is there anything else about the SOLAR registry that you, or what you've learned in your practice? And because you see lots of psoriasis, you're trial oriented with regard to your psoriatic patients, and any insights for our audience?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing about SOLAR is that SOLAR, the paper that was published recently was SOLAR 1.0. Okay, that was the original SOLAR. It looked at TNF inhibitors, ustekinumab, 1223 inhibitors, but it did not have much IL-17, IL-23 inhibitors because they came after SOLAR was enrolled. So now there's a SOLAR 2.0. So they had an amendment and they extended the SOLAR study to include IL-23 inhibitor guselkumab, the IL-17 inhibitors, and that's actually ongoing right now. So SOLAR is not completed and having all the results. It is an ongoing registry. We continue to gather a lot of information. SOLAR 2.0 is even more global than SOLAR 1.0. We have North America, but we have many more sites outside of North America. So we're going to get a more diverse population and more biologics to follow. So anytime you go to a dermatology meeting, I do highly recommend you look out for the updated SOLAR posters, because you're going to get really great information comparing the therapies that we have in the real world in infection rates, malignancies, again, overall mortality, mental health. All of these things are presented on a regular basis with these updates. So it really is a rich registry. So I'm excited about it. This paper was just the Canadian subgroup of the Solar 1.0, so a small piece of the larger puzzle. But there's so much more coming, so it's really going to be something to keep your eye out for.
Okay, so let's book our next podcast for 8 years from now, all right? And then we can talk about Solar 2.0. Listen, I wanted to, before I let you go, I wanted to really highlight and actually congratulate you on the acknowledgement of Dr. Poulin in the article, a guy that contributed a tremendous amount to the psoriasis and the care of psoriatic patients. And I really appreciated the fact that you acknowledged his contribution to this Solar 1.0. So thank you.
You know, I don't know the numbers, but I'm pretty sure he was, if not the highest, one of the highest enrollers from Canada with this. And he really did devote much of his time and his career to psoriasis patients and really, really made a difference in the psoriasis world. So we were really grateful for his contribution.
Okay, well, thanks again, and until next time.
Thank you.
All right, well, once again, that's it for this episode of J.C. Smith Author Interviews. I hope you enjoyed your time with us and enjoyed it as much as Melinda and I enjoyed bringing it to you. If you did, please give us a rating, review where you listen. It helps more people find these interviews. Try subscribing so you don't miss any future episodes. If you're looking for more great CDA podcasts, be sure to check out Dermalogs, our resident podcast, that was hosted by our colleague, Dr. Carrie Purdy. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Kirk Barber. Until next time, be good to each other.